Before we get started with today's show, I want to talk to you about the Right Time Book Club. We're going to get started on April 23rd. The book, The Jordan Rules by Sam Smith. We got a bunch of great guests for you. The first guest will be J.A. Adande. We'll also have my man Vinny Goodwill of Yahoo Sports. We'll be talking to B.J. Armstrong, formerly of the Bulls, Joe Dumars, formerly of the Pistons, and Sam Smith, the author of the book. So get your copy of the book wherever books are sold, hardcover or digital. Check that out. It's going to be a good time. Plus, be sure to check out ESPN Daily, our podcast that's putting out an episode every single day, rain or shine. Some good episodes this week, one where former Piston Darko Milicic talk about where he is right now and a breakdown of draft prospect Jordan Love and his potential. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Right Time. My name is Bomani Jones. Thanks for listening. Wherever you get your podcasts, rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. It's that time of week where we have a guest and Michael Collins will join us on this episode. But first. Boy, I gotta tell you, I do not really understand exactly how timing works, but on Monday, I did a little online clip for the good folks at Highly Questionable. We were talking about Dabo Swinney. You see that game where Dabo said that we gonna kick coronavirus in the teeth as America. We storm Normandy, you know, so like we'll be all right in this coronavirus, then explaining how he's gonna jump on his private plane and go down to Florida maybe for Easter and all of this stuff. And I said that he sounded stupid, right? I was like, yo, stop being stupid because you sound stupid right now. Apparently, they don't get internet stuff down there around Clemson as quick as they do in other places because it wasn't until late Wednesday night going into Thursday that all of a sudden people got mad at me. And now I'm in my mentions and they all on me about, why are you upset with Dabo for having optimism? I don't mind him having optimism. I got a problem with him saying something that's stupid. Right? Like optimistic people say stupid things all the time. It's one of the unfortunate side effects of optimism is that it can lead you to places that honestly don't make very much sense. Right? And so where we are with Dabo, when he's like, we gonna kick this virus in the teeth. That's not how viruses work. To me, everything Dabo needs to be saying is stay inside until it's time to come outside. Right? That's the only thing a person in a responsible position to me right now. Only thing there is for you to say to people is stay inside until it's time to come outside. Don't tell me about, hey, we gonna get these guys back out here and anything else. Don't do that to people, man. That ain't really helping. Stay inside until it's time to come outside. That's all there is for you to say. But when I hear these coaches like him and Mike Gundy, who sounded just completely ridiculous this week, where they sound so much like they're trying to push guys to get back and like, yo, we're gonna get back. Yo, we're gonna get back. Yo, we're gonna get back. Nothing is more important right now than dealing with the virus itself. And so to me, when I hear somebody like Dabo put any level of significance onto something other than keeping people safe, come on, man. It doesn't sound like you care that much about keeping people safe. This football is not that important. And maybe that's part of it with these football coaches is that their belief is that this stuff is so important that they have to push and they have to give this idea because they think that what they do matters that damn much. Mike Gundy talking about these kids are, did you see that game? Mike Gundy said these players are 18, 19, 20, 21, 22 years old. They're strong. They can fight off this virus. So once they're all safe, we need to get them in. We need to sequester them because the state of Oklahoma needs the money.
Yeah, I mean, it kind of reminds me of like a army general or something like that. Like we're taking hits on the front line, you know, but we'll be all right. We just got to keep marching.
Right.
No matter what anybody says, no matter how much fire we're taking, we're storming the beach.
Yeah. And look, some people just got to die. Right. Like that's one of the wildest things about this. Like I understand completely that some people will die. Right. Like it's a tragedy, but there's no way around it. Some people will die, but that is not the same as some people got to die. Right. Like in the way that this has been offered by so many people, it's like, look, to get this going, y'all just got to understand some people got to die. If I was willing to die for this economy, I would have joined the army. Right. Like all these people that are out here, if you was willing to die for the economy, you'd have been over there in Iraq. You'd have been over there in Afghanistan, right? You'd have been out there in all these places. You'd have been invading Panama in 1989. I'm not willing to die for this economy.
Well, what's so whack about it, too, is for many of the kids that come from really difficult financial situations, for them, two choices. Oh, I'm joining the Marines or I'm going to try and make this football thing work, right?
Yes. College football, I don't want to say it's being exposed right now because that feels unfair. I'm struggling to think of the right word to say, but so let's think about a couple things here. One, I do think, like, you see the story about Alabama giving the kids Apple Watches so they can make sure that they're all doing their workouts.
And you got saving on email now, too.
Yeah, I did see that. I thought that was interesting. I do find it a bit problematic, this idea that there's this level of surveillance that is going on here. But I do think it's worth noting that a lot of these coaches are afraid of the environments that they're sending these players back into. Because I think that with this idea of coming back, like, college isn't open anymore, so you just go back home, that what we're imagining is a bunch of kids who are just going back to their parents' comfortable houses and just kind of laying around and all this stuff. Hey, man, a whole lot of people going back home and they ain't got no bed in the house no more. You know what I mean? Like a whole lot of people are going home. Home is not built for them anymore. They have moved out. Like, this idea that you can go home, not everybody has home to go back to. And so I do think that for a lot of legitimate reasons, a lot of these coaches are afraid of what's happening when they're sending these players back. Because if we're being fair, we talk about a lot of the players, a lot of these players weren't just going to college. They were getting the hell away from wherever it was that they were. Right. So I imagine that if the coaches are like, yo, we can come back here and play football, it's going to be a whole lot of dudes that can't wait for nothing more than to get back out there and play football because that's the place that they want to be. But we don't know if that kind of thing is safe. And so when we start hearing these coaches talking about leaning on these cats about coming back, it's like, hey, man, you're going to have to protect them from themselves in this, in a lot of cases, because this place for a lot of them is generally the best place for them to be. But it's not a good place for you to be if it might ultimately kill you, right? If it might ultimately kill other people because you've turned up here, then under those circumstances, this is not the place for you to be. And so when you hear these cats like Gundy, not just talking about we need this for the economy or anything else, but any level of leaning that they're doing on these kids are vulnerable. These kids don't have any power. And a lot of them are not in a position to look up and be like, hey, coach, I'm afraid and I can't come do this. They don't have this luxury. And so when I hear a dude like Dabo and he's out here being like, yeah, we just going to kick this virus in the teeth. Dude, it's irresponsible to say that because of the weight that you're going to put on your players and you leaning on them and making them believe that they have to come back and do this. At the same time, I don't think this is a problem with Clemson, but I also do understand this. There's going to be a whole lot of like programs, like the smaller programs that don't generate any revenue. It's going to be a lot of them that don't exist anymore. Like, they're not necessarily going to come back. And you got to understand, as much as I find that to be terrible about these programs, I am a graduate of a historically black college. You got to realize that for a lot of us, a lot of our schools are probably not going to come back. If your school's got like a 50 or 60 million, not billion, million dollar endowment, how much can that school endure? How much can it take? Like, there's a lot of awful things that could possibly happen. I'm not going to tell students that they need to go back because the college needs their money. I'm not going to tell them to risk their lives because other people need to eat. I'm not going to do that. And so when I hear these coaches who have all their money basically saying they got to come back so that everybody can get paid, I'm not doing that, man. I'm not here for it. And so all these Clemson folks are hitting me, Gabe. Let me find some of the highlights of what these Clemson folks have had to say to me. And I imagine that some of this is kind of bot heavy, but of course, part of it is they hit me on the, you know, the Jesus kick. Well, he just has faith in God. What's wrong with having faith in God? If your faith in God is going to cause people to die, then I have a problem with your faith in God.
What do you think about Ed Orgeron being the hero we all need right now? Hopping on with the doc from LSU, doing a little PSA.
Right, but you know the level on that, right?
No, tell me.
Orgeron is cool with the governor.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
And Louisiana has a Democrat governor. And look, I'm not here trying to say which party is or is not doing this right. What I am saying, though, is if you look in the news, the states that do not have the shelter at home orders are the ones that waited the longest to do it. Go look at their political affiliations. Like, the Democratic Party has basically made it clear that they are operating on the side of safety on this one in a way that many wings of the Republican Party are not. But since Louisiana is the rare southern state with a Democratic governor, that then puts Ed Orgeron in the rare position to be the guy that is, in fact, the hero that we need, because the people that he is backing are the ones telling you to keep your stankin' ass at home, right? And so there we go. There we have Orgeron, who is the guy that's doing that. But if it was a different governor in Louisiana, Orgeron probably not going to be the person who would do that. But this, yo, man, this stuff is serious. And if you've been reading the news, it is especially serious for Black people who are suffering a disproportionate amount of the deaths in this that have a lot to do with long range health concerns that come for Black people generally in this country. Your man Fauci said at the press conference, we talked about, we need to talk about the disparities within the African-American community. No, the disparities are not within the Black community. That's not how disparities work. The disparity we're talking about is a disparity within America, right? Because within, that's Black people versus Black people. We're talking about Black people compared to everybody else. And so think about all these things. You can look it up. Like I'm not making this stuff up. The information is readily available. That's why it's so crazy to have the Dabos and the Mike Gundys of the world being the people who come out here and are like, well, we need to hurry up and get out here. If I had to guess, part of why a lot of these Black people are catching this disease right now in ways that white people are not is because so many of them have to go out there and get this money for other people. So many of them do not have the luxury of working from their couches like I am doing right now. They're having to go out in this environment. When I see the people that's getting on and off the subways, man, it ain't white people, right? And it's not to say that there are no white people that are in these circumstances, but you go look at the places where the infection rates are the highest, man. They did a map of New York. I'm just here to tell you, Staten Island, it looked like a lot fewer cases over there than it did in Harlem and the Bronx. Like this is playing itself out. And so to have these coaches, and it's important to note, having these rich white men explaining how these young Black dudes need to come out here and get this money for everybody else. Yo, I cannot rock with that. And when I hear Dabo's at least Mike Gundy had a cold, cynical explanation, right? Right. He says, look, we'll just get them. We'll lock them in a room. They'll all be safe. And then we can go get this money. I have a problem with that, but at least I think that makes a lot more sense than we storm Normandy. We put a man on the moon. What's the coronavirus going to do to us? You understand what I'm saying? Like, that's just dumb. That's dumb. And you mad at me for saying that it's dumb. I'm not saying that Dabo is stupid. I'm saying he said something stupid and he needs to stop being stupid, because if the best he could do was be stupid, I'd just be like, hey, well, you know, Dabo, he's just stupid. This is all he's got. I think he can do better than that. So I'm asking him to stop being stupid. And if you don't think he's capable of better than being stupid, you're the one that's calling him stupid, not me. I'm trying to do my part to keep people safe.
And we appreciate you for this public service announcement.
There we go. I am here for y'all. And Dabo say he here for those kids. I'm telling him to act like he actually is.
Yeah, man. We don't need no combination of no Joe Dirt and General George Patton giving us advice. No.
By the way, I just had somebody in my mentions say something. They referred to Dabo as the Tiger King. And I don't know if Dabo has seen Tiger King, but okay, how offended would Dabo be if you compared him to Joe Exotic?
This ain't no compliment.
Well, even if it was a compliment, I'm asking you this. Do you think that Dabo would have attended one of Joe Exotic's weddings? Because I don't think he would have.
Yeah, I don't know about that. I do find it funny that we're turning like every kind of middle-aged white guy into the Tiger King.
Yes, we are. Yes, we are. But I tell you this, Dabo would get the invitation to Joe Exotic's wedding, and I bet you very quickly he'd be like, hey guys, I practice social distancing.
Trying to protect that money.
Try not to go to Joe Exotic's wedding.
Yeah.
It's not really what Dabo's into. All right. Joining us now on the right time, we got my man. Check out his podcast, Maddie and the Caddy. You know him here. We have him on all the time. My man, Michael Collins. Mike, what in the hell are you doing with yourself these days?
Quite honestly, I got a squirrel problem in my backyard that I'm dealing with. And I have learned that not even in a previous life was I a teacher. Homeschooling, not going great right now at the Collins crew.
Now, how old are your kids?
13 and 11.
Oh, man. And that means that they right at that prime back talk age, too.
Now, the 13-year-old is the one normally who will bow up a little bit. And then, you know, I got to laugh. And be like, okay, here we go. Like, come on, man. But it's the 11-year-old is the one that school-wise, not feeling it. It's hard for me because as someone who was that same way when I was a kid, you know, it's one of those do as I say, not as I did. But yes. I keep trying to say, look, I don't want you to have to learn the same hard lessons that I learned. But then it's hard to do that because they look at me and be like, well, you made it.
yeah, you know, and the thing is, you got to tell them, like, I made it, but, you know, as much as this has provided a good life, homie, you ain't trying to carry these bags.
And I try to go, look, we can go back where I grew up and I can introduce you to everybody else that was trying to do the same thing and didn't make it. So, like, the percentages are not in your favor. So, I'm just trying. make it a little easier later, so you don't even got to go through some of the other tough stuff. So it's hard to get that message across when it's like the worst thing we got going on right now at our place is a squirrel problem. we seem to be okay, which is crazy, you know.
Well, I tell you what, Dawn, I hadn't quite thought about it, Gabe. I guess I know what we gonna have to do next week for the voicemail. You said 13-year-old, kind of, you know, the one that's likely to bow up. I imagine that in the time of this quarantine and everybody being around each other, a whole lot of 13 to 15-year-olds are gonna have that fateful moment where they are under the grand misunderstanding that now is the time to try pops.
I cannot tell you how many conversations that I've had with friends of mine that went through that same thing and are going through that same thing. And that is the problem with being in tight quarters. You know, it's three dudes and one female in our house. Mm-hmm. When the testosterone starts flowing, I liken it to, you know how they say sometimes you have those teenage rogue elephants that when they go into musk, they just act crazy.
Yeah.
And every now and then you got to put them down. It's kind of like that. It's like, I feel what you're going through and I understand it because as a guy, I went through it too. Like you kind of feeling your oats and everything. But every now and then I'm trying to avoid that moment where you do something or say something and then realize to yourself, oh, I messed up. And you're like, yeah, you did. And it's not going to end well. And now there ain't no going back.
Yep. He's going to learn about three important words. Center of gravity. Center of gravity is going to make something very, very clear to you. You might have thought that this is going to go a different way.
Yeah.
Center of gravity. Low man wins.
Yeah, yeah. If your mom can still beat you in an arm wrestling contest, you probably don't want to test your dad.
Yeah, and by the way, if it gets to the point of you testing your dad and your dad tests back, you need to understand, kids, mom probably not going to help. And don't let it be over nothing that involves her, because mom is definitely not going to help.
And the hard part, though, in my house is mom was raised in a house with all girls.
Oh.
So she's one of three sisters, and the only male in the house was her pops. So she doesn't quite understand the dynamic of how dudes solve problems. She don't understand how, like, when sometimes when you see two boys and they look like, or they are, they're just full out, it's war. And then 10 minutes later, they just playing together out in the backyard. But it's like, that's the whole, we still are animals kind of thing. Mm-hmm. We haven't gotten rid of that yet. Like, there's still a little bit of that in there. But if you've never seen it or been around it, me, I was lucky enough that, you know, I grew up with my two best friends were less than a year apart. They were like 11 months apart. So when they would throw down, it was hilarious. So their mom, I'll throw them under the bus, Jose and Bully Diaz. And we lived in Garden Court Apartments back in Lancaster, Pennsylvania, in the 7th Ward. And they would get to arguing and fighting, and their mom would grab the belt, and then both of them would jump under the bed, and they would be fighting under the bed while their mom is screaming at them in Puerto Rican, swinging the belt under the bed. Now they're fighting over who gets up against the wall, because whoever's against the wall is not getting hit with the belt. And I'm trying not to laugh because I'm in the position too, knowing, you know, when that saying it takes a village is true. So I know if I start giggling and laughing, then the belt's coming my way too. So I'm just standing there quiet, but I don't want to miss the show.
Right. Can we take a moment to appreciate that Michael Collins just said that they mama be screaming at them in Puerto Rican?
Mm-hmm.
In Puerto Rican. Not Spanish.
Nope.
Puerto Rican.
Correct. Boricua. Big time. Come on, man. Because when I grew up, everybody thought I was Spanish. People assumed I'm half black and half white, but I had loose curls. My skin tone is very similar to what my best friends who were Puerto Rican, it was the same skin tone, and I got green eyes. So people would come up to me and just start speaking Spanish. And I'd be like, I'm not Puerto Rican. One guy argued with me, and I had to point to my mom. I used to make fun of my mom. My mom's so white, I called her see-through. So I was just going to make her my science project. And I pointed at my mom, was like, I'm not Spanish, man. That's my mom right there. And they, oh, lady, I'm very sorry. But I would tell people, too, yo entiendo mucho, pero hablo poquito. So I understand Spanish, but I don't speak it real well.
Yeah, yeah. Me working with Dad, I gradually picked up enough. I just wanted to pick up enough Spanish to know when they was talking about me.
That's what I'm saying. All I need to know is when you talking about me.
That was it. Like, I don't really care what y'all talk about amongst yourselves. Y'all don't want me involved in the conversation. That's fine, right? Y'all ain't got to whisper. You can just talk in Spanish. That's cool.
Right.
But is they Nick? Whoa, what you mean? Who negrito? I'm looking around this room, And I don't see nobody else that could possibly be than me.
Mine was Gordo.
Ah.
If I heard him like looking kind of my way and saying Gordo, the little fat kid, what? I heard you. If it ain't nothing to do with empanadas, then if you ain't talking food, we might have a problem. There was a lot of surprised kids when I was like, what did you call me, man? And they was like, oh, snappy hurt. Yeah, I heard you.
So you're down there. What, you in Jupiter down in Florida?
No, I'm in Gainesville. I'm north. I'm south of Jacksonville and north of Orlando.
What's it looking like?
Okay, so the golf course, I live on a golf course, and the golf course is open, but my golf course is only allowing walking, mm-hmm. which is nice. The town itself is pretty empty. A lot of the kids are gone. Most of them left because now they're all doing online classes, and it's the same with both the public and the private school systems that are down here in Gainesville are the same way. They're all now going to online stuff. The one thing that school districts did down here, which I was surprised that they did it, but they gave parents the option because it was of how it all went down and the time of year that it is happening. They gave parents the options to go. If you just want to start over with the kid next year in the same grade, you have that option to do.
Interesting.
Yeah, these are strange times that we are living in because we are now the guinea pigs on a mass scale. It's one thing to kind of do it with 10 or 15 people to say, hey, let's kind of see how this goes. It's another thing when you take a couple hundred thousand people and go, this is how it's going to be and how it has to be.
Right.
And we just got to make this work and see what happens. So some parts of it are easy. Some parts of it, oh man, makes you definitely say teachers do not make enough money.
Yeah. All y'all, everybody seem to get it now about what it is the teachers got
to
do.
Yeah. That $1 trillion stimulus package, $1 trillion should go to all educators. You can do whatever you want with the second trillion, but the first trillion going to the teachers.
Well, tell me this. What have you learned in this process that you thought you knew how to do in school that you realize you don't really know how to do that well at all?
You think that all math stays with you, and it does not. It does not. Once you start talking about multiplying and dividing fractions, like I get the decimal stuff. I got that. Even the algebra stuff. I remember a little bit, but man, you start talking about flipping fractions and then turning how fractions turn into decimal. Oh, no. Yeah, no. That'd be in the driveway pushing the broom because I'm the janitor.
They hubbling you?
Yeah. But see, I'm always the first one to say, I don't know. We got to look this up.
Mm-hmm.
That's the beauty of the internet, too, which we didn't necessarily have.
Right.
Growing up, it was like, if you didn't know it, you couldn't just grab your phone real quick and be like, hold up, let me look that up real quick.
Yes. You missing the Masters? You would typically be at Augusta right now?
You know, I can tell you this, man, because this is how we roll, me and you. The Masters is the one tournament I can't wait to get to. And about 2 days after being there, I can't wait to get the hell out.
It's just too much.
You love the nostalgia and the old school feel of it. And then after 2 days, you're like, I get it. Like, no phones. But if I'm down on number 13 and something happens, there's no way for my editor. There's no way for a producer. There's no way for anyone to get in touch with me to say a mountain lion came out and grabbed somebody and you need to come back and get up here to get ready to go. There's no way to get in contact with anybody to do that. So in that sense, it's tough. But that media center, bruh. We got our own restaurant. We got a locker room with showers.
Really?
The media center. I have my own locker in the media center. You take a shower, you do whatever you need to do. Everything is right there.
The thing that I always say about Augusta is nobody does branding better. Nobody does. Like, they're all their apps and stuff when they broadcast and everything, the way the television stuff is done. Nobody brands their whole situation better. Even the idea that as much as this is like the most elite group of people that we can point to, everything when you come for the Masters is cheap, right? Like, they are allowing you to come in at your price point.
It's funny that you say that about branding too. You know, the soda there is Masters soda.
Really?
When you say there's no branding, I'm talking about like there is not one sign for any company, period. None whatsoever. So when you go get a beer, you have no clue what kind of beer you're drinking. It's Masters beer. When you get, like I said, a cola, it's Masters cola. It's Master's Lemon Lime Soda. It could be Sprite. It could be 7-Up. It could be, you have no clue. Everything is Master's from every sandwich. It's only Master's. And that's one of the unique things about it too. A lot of other golf tournaments, you walk around and you'll see signs like ADT or Dell or you name the company and there's ads all over the place. Even at the Players Championship, US Open, there is plenty of branding. At the Masters, there's zero. They don't even let the tour trucks on property. The tour trucks where the guys have their clubs worked on and whatnot are across the street in a parking lot.
Look, man, I tell you this, though. I feel very confident that Masters Cola is Coke, right?
We are in Georgia.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's still in the state of Georgia, right? like Augusta National is bigger than everything, but ain't nothing bigger than Coke, right? They may not put the name on there, but I imagine there's somebody that's come back to the register and been like, hey, man, this ain't Coke.
Well, you know what? I don't know that anyone has drank it and gone back and be like, hey, why y'all serving Pepsi? Well, I don't think anybody's ever done that. I don't think so. But when you're at the Masters, you don't even care. It don't even matter. I do tell people, though, that pimento cheese sandwich is the biggest practical joke that's ever been played. That is so, I don't understand how people can think that that's a delicious, that is so nasty. It's so disgusting.
People love it, man. I think it's one of those where it's like, this is the thing they do here. And so you want to say, like, just how no matter what, like, it's changing now because everything is becoming so national. But, like, every local place has its own burger chain. And so the way that you say that you've been to that place is to talk about how much you love it. So, like, some of these people love In-N-Out Burger that way. A lot of them just want to tell you they've been to California.
True that. But, like, at the Kentucky Derby, when you have the mint julep, and so you go, people who've been, I've never been, and I've never been to Wimbledon, but they say you got to have the strawberries and cream when you're there. So I think what it is everyone, when you go to the Masters, like it's tradition that you got to have a pimento cheese sandwich. But I'm going to be honest with you. I can't tell you how many people that I see like that walk onto the grounds and you see the first time they got that green packaging and they tear it open and they pull it out and it's not even Wonder Bread. You know it's Wonder Bread, but it ain't Wonder Bread.
Right.
And you see them take that first bite looking around and then they get a little confused look on their face when the flavor hits. And then you look in some of them trash bins and it's like, it's a lot of one bite pimento cheese sandwiches in there. And then you see everybody just scarfing them egg salads down, just crushing them.
Well, let me tell you, it's funny you mentioned Wimbledon in that. Have you seen this story where apparently for, I forget how many years, Wimbledon had been paying $2 million a year for pandemic insurance? And this year they cashed it.
The report initially was that the Open Championship did the same thing. And that's why they used the term cancel instead of postpone. Because you have to say cancel in order to collect that insurance money.
Uh-huh.
Wimbledon was scheduled to finish Sunday, July 12th. The Open Championship was scheduled to start Monday, the 13th. It always works that way. The day after Wimbledon ends, the Open starts. And so this year, the Open was the 149th. And that's why they were at Royal St. George. So in 2021, we could be at St. Andrews for the 150th. So when that report came out, Wimbledon cancels. They have an insurance policy. Then it's a similar report said the Open's going to do the same thing. Now, when the first report came out, the Open itself, the CEO, Martin Slumbers, he came out and backtracked. He walked it back and was like, we haven't made any decisions as of yet. We're still working out scenarios, blah, 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 whatever. But then when it came out, then they canceled and didn't postpone. And that's the one major championship that's not scheduled to happen this year. The little light bulb went off. Ah, y'all got that insurance policy too. We just don't know how much they was paying.
Right. And so with the Masters though, I find it interesting. The day that I fully realized like how much clout we were talking about with the Masters, it was the year that Martha Burke had really got it cracking. And the Masters was just like, call the sponsors. You know what, boys? Block's a little hot. We'll cover this ourselves. Ain't no commercials, ain't nothing else. We like how all these other events, like we're talking about college football programs might go out of business. Like with South by Southwest canceled this year, there are people who are wondering if there will be another South by Southwest, right? Just right. Because they need the revenue, like all these different things and the people need the revenue. The Masters looked up once and said, we don't need your stinking money. We'll buy the time ourselves. Like, no matter what happens with this, it'll be another Masters. Please believe that.
That is the ultimate backfire in how much power you think you have. When you come at an organization and it's like, you know what? And with belligerence, I'm going after all your sponsors. We're going to see what you're doing then.
Yep.
And they come back at you and go, we ain't got no sponsors because we're going to go commercial free. And the collective golf and almost the collective sports world was like, wait, the Masters with no commercials? Yeah. And it was almost to the point where they were like, can Martha Burke do some more stuff so we can get more stuff with no commercials?
Right. And yo, and the thing was, when that happened, A, the Masters doesn't typically do a lot of commercials anyway.
Right.
Her point is valid. Like, it's not like she came out of nowhere on this. She was like, she did what you always do. We gonna come at your money. And they were like, ma'am, we are the money.
Well, this is what happens when two bullies go toe-to-toe. She was using a bully pulpit to try and get the Masters to do something that people have been arguing about with them for a lot of years. Why don't you have any women members? It was a bone of contention for a long time, but that's a place where it's almost the sense of belligerence. If I say, you have to do this and you have, because everyone else is doing, and you start wagging your finger, they're going to bow up and be like, you don't tell us what to do. That was also a place where when everyone stopped smoking, the one, when they asked him, are you still going to allow smoking on the, this guy reaches to his pocket and lights a cigarette on the podium. Talk about, we don't have a cigarette policy here at a, and smoking a cigarette when he's telling them. So Martha Burke trying to use a bully pulpit that normally works. Normally, when you go after a corporation and say, I'm going after all your sponsors and anybody who has anything to do with you, you're used to seeing them back down. This one, you hit a bully in the face and that bully reached back and pulled out a hammer and just whap. That was that. And then it was like, oh my gosh. I mean, it didn't change the narrative of most of the world looking at Augusta and saying, come on, y'all, you got to do better than this. Like, you can't be a so-called steward of the game and yet alienate half of the population of the world saying, you know, we set the standard for golf. Like, well, you don't if you don't have women members. But it's also a place where nobody telling them what to do.
Mm-mm.
Who's the member that they get? You know what? Hey, here's Condoleezza Rice. Well, say something. Say something.
Right. They were like, hold on, don't you forget. Check that other box, too. All right.
That's all I'm trying to say. Like, here you go, Condoleezza Rice. Say something. What you going? You didn't say nothing.
No, that's the thing. Like, they were just like, this is the flex. Like, even somebody like me, when I saw that that was how they played it, I was like, I don't know what you're supposed to do after this. Right? Like what they say, like, we ain't really tripping on money.
Y'all win again.
Oh, okay. Got it.
Think about this. Augusta 2 this year, because it's a stream of revenue for that club. That club does do okay.
Mm-hmm.
The amount of merchandise they sell, but there's no Masters online to buy merchandise.
No.
Like, everything that is purchased that has a Masters logo on it, if you bought it online, that's secondary market and marked up. So the fact that through all of that, they were just, we selling sandwiches for $2.50. You know, we selling drinks for $1.25. We selling beers for $2.80 to $3, you know, yeah. And we doing just fine with all the merchandise that we sell. And that place does move merchandise. I think the average first timer is $1,200, $1,100 to $1,200.
Oh wow.
I've been there 7 years and I clear that every year.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. You can't help it because there's some new cool things, and I'll be the first to admit I have a small hat problem. I may have an issue with some hats, you know.
That's what happens when the balding starts early, huh?
Yeah. And I just love cool hats. And so a Masters hat is not something you see a lot. A couple of years ago, I won the media lottery and got to play. You know, there's a lottery that you can win and you can play Monday after the Masters. And you literally get to play Augusta National in Sunday conditions. They keep the course the exact same as it is for Sunday. And I've got to play 2017, the year that Sergio won. And so Monday, I got a locker in the champions locker room. One of the coolest things, aside from everything that happened on the golf course, is when we finished, the pro shop was open. And the pro shop had already taken all of the Masters gear out. And the gear that was in the pro shop that you can only get in the pro shop was Augusta National Country Club gear. The logo's a little different. Nothing on it says Masters. It only says, but you can't get, trying to find something that only says Augusta National Golf Club, you're not getting it the week of the Masters because it's not out. There's no such thing. You only get Masters stuff. So that whole $1,200, bruh, I doubled that day. Because you don't know when you're getting to come back.
What'd you shoot that day, by the way?
91, I think, 91. I have the scorecard somewhere. It was wild because I'll never forget this. Still no cell phones no matter what. No cell phones even on Monday. So I have my cell phone and my work cell phone are turned off and in the rental car. And I went to Best Buy. When I learned that I won the lottery, I ran down to Best Buy, bought a camera, a little camera, a good one. And I put the camera in the golf bag. And when I get down to the driving range, my caddy, I tell him, hey, let me know when it's okay if I can sneak my camera out and get a couple pictures when we're on the course. And he looks at me. He was like, you ain't taking pictures today. So I thought that was a rule. So I go, all right, okay, no worries. I won't break it out. He goes, nope, give it to me. So I'm like, okay, they're real sticklers. Like, here you go. Here's the camera. Like, I'm playing. I'll do whatever you say. Like, I am not going to mess this up. And he goes, and give me the scorecard they gave you. And I was like, what? Okay. And I hand him the scorecard and he takes the pencil and he's got the camera. And he was like, the only thing you're doing today is playing golf. You ain't keeping score. You ain't taking pictures. I want you to just play golf at Augusta National. And it was the greatest thing. As a caddy, I hadn't even gone there mentally. And it was the coolest thing that another caddy could do for me, because now the only thing I'm thinking about is every single moment and literally every moment looking around and spent and then focusing on hitting a golf shot at hand. And so it was like at the end, he gave me the scorecard and I had made a promise to Pat Perez that I wouldn't add the scores up until I was with him on that Tuesday night. So I didn't. And I had no ideas, the pictures. I mean, you're going to get the picture that you always take on the bridge going over to number 12 and some of the plaques and stuff like that. But I had no idea. I never saw him taking pictures. And I was freaking out for a minute because I was like, man, I hope I'm getting some pictures, man. And then when I went through and scrolled it, there's two pictures that he took that I've already told my wife I want at my funeral. And one of them is on 13. Where I'm walking down a fairway on 13 and I never saw him take the picture and he took it from behind me. It looks like I am walking all alone with the stands up down the 13th hole with the green in the back. And I mean, it was not a cloud in the sky. And it's just a picture of me walking away, but walking down 13 that when I saw it, it put a lump in my throat.
How am I supposed to lie about my score if somebody else gonna keep it? That's all I want to know, right? How I'm supposed to take down some of these strokes if I ain't got the pencil in the scorecard?
Yeah, but you know what? I trusted him because, see, you have to remember I was there that whole week. So I was always hanging down at the caddy spot. So the caddy shack that's down there, that was, I mean, even though it's not my assignment, as a guy who was a caddy on tour, who represents, I feel like I represent caddies all across America. I'm America's caddy. So I would hang down there for the week. So the Augusta National caddies worked the caddy shack that week for the pro caddies that come in. So I had spent the whole week down there hanging out with the guy who ended up caddying for me anyway. So I trusted him completely.
I hadn't thought about this. You're the man with the caddies, huh?
I don't know that I'm the man with the caddies. I think what me and Jim McKay Bones are kind of the first two pro caddies that successfully made the switch into the broadcast media, because we know in media how many ex-professional football players, ex-basketball players, ex-baseball players, they all get to come to the broadcast side. And it's the same with golfers. I mean, golfers, when they're done playing, a lot of them want to do the broadcast stuff, but no one had ever gotten a caddy's perspective on it. So when I first got asked to do Sirius XM and then subsequently, one of our guys at ESPN heard me and was like, hey, reach out to this dude. So the fact that, you know, a caddy made it to ESPN and then another caddy made it to Golf Channel, NBC, a lot of caddies look at us and kind of go, okay, see, man, not only can we be successful in our profession, which now it is looked at as a profession, but there can be a life afterwards that's successful as well. So I think that earned the respect of a lot of caddies, you know, and kind of my journey through caddying as well, coming from stand-up comedy where people were like, this dude's a comedian, like he ain't going to take caddying seriously. And then caddies saw how I was on the golf course, and they caddies would tell my friends would be like, hey, man, dudes are talking about how serious you are on the golf course, and they like it. And I'm like, well, I'm not going to disrespect the game out here. Like, I ain't telling no knock-knock jokes and like, you know, a priest, the rabbi, and a gorilla walk into a bar. Like, why would I do that on the golf course? That's stupid. That ain't going to help a player. So I think that whole journey kind of changed the perspective and humbles me to this day on how caddies are open with me and treat me that are still out there grinding on the PGA Tour and the LPGA Tour.
So let me ask you this about the tour and like all this stuff is going on. Cause like you talk about the guys being on the golf course, and I really don't blame these dudes who try to play golf. Cause if they're like, look, if I can stay away from people and I ain't doing nothing else, then I might as well get out here. But like, how do you think the tour is going to be affected by all of this?
They're affected a bunch. Well, number one, they still haven't even postponed or canceled events that are scheduled May 21st, like in at Colonial. And you know, one of the events that they're talking about trying to move, since they moved some of the majors, the U.S. Open now, where it got moved, its date is open. So Jack Nicklaus's tournament, the Memorial, wants to move out of its slot into where the U.S. Open was, but it's still scheduled to go on. And that's the last week of May, which doesn't seem possible that that's going to happen.
They hoping like hell, boy. Like the idea that the U.S. Open is saying, nah, we're not going to be here. And somebody else is like, oh, you ain't going to eat that? All right.
Yeah. Or a tournament like the Open Championship, which isn't scheduled till July. It was like, yo, we out. See ya. We'll see y'all next year. And there's still events in May where they're like, hey, maybe. Like, nah. And that's the thing, Bo, you know me, man. I'm optimistic. I try to see the silver lining. You know, I try to look at the good in everything. But realistically, to think we're going to be playing in June is just it. I don't see it happening. I don't see us being ready to play golf in 6 weeks when there are still places that are on complete lockdown. I don't understand how they think that they're going to pull this off. Now, even in my opinion, first week of August, which is when the PGA Championship is supposed to happen, even that seems to me as a more hopeful than realistic thing, not only because we don't know where we will be as a country as far as where this pandemic and virus is by then. We have no idea whether there's going to be a phase two or phase three. And the fact that the PGA Championship is still scheduled to be held in San Francisco. Ooh. Yes, exactly. Golf has never been the first to do anything. So to think that golf would be the first sport to come back, golf is a sport that is more image conscious than the NFL. And I know that sounds crazy, but think about this. You are not going to hear.
Yeah, golf ain't telling you nothing.
Have you ever heard of a golfer? Have you heard of a golfer getting a DUI other than Tiger Woods? Because it was Tiger, so he's bigger than just the golf news. But have you ever heard of a PGA Tour pro getting a DUI? Like, you think it ain't happened?
Right.
See? So the thought of golf being the guinea pig, like, oh, man, we'll bring all our guys back because, you know, golf will be the easiest thing for social distancing. Yes, inside the ropes, it's easy for social distancing. But how are the players going to get to the tournament? How are they literally getting from the airplane to the hotel? Where are they staying? Are they going to stay at an empty? Like, who's changing the sheets? Right? And then when you get to the car, like, are you getting a rental car? Who are you getting a rental car from? Somebody got to be working the rental counter. And then when you get to the golf course, are you just pulling up and jumping out the car and going straight to the driving range? You going into the locker room? Who's opening the locker room door? Who's working in there? You going to go to the bathroom? Who cleaning up? Who changing the toilet paper? Are you going to eat? Who's cooking the food? Who's bringing the food? Who's throwing the trash out? Like, who's doing the dishes? Like, those, and that's not, you ain't even got to the course yet. Now you get to the course, okay, we're going to put this on TV. Well, who's filming it? You got to have a camera dude. Okay, yeah, we got a camera guy, but the camera guy's not the producer. Oh, yeah, where's the camera picture going to go to? We need a cord to go to the truck. Who's in the truck? Who drove the truck? Like, who's producing? Who's directing? Where are those people at? Like, everything that goes into a production of a golf broadcast can be even bigger than football, basketball, baseball, and hockey, because at least those venues are all in one static place. So you could put cameras up in a stadium and the field ain't going to change. It doesn't work like that with golf. Like, 1 week, the golf course looks like this, and the next week is completely different. Everything got to move. It's a traveling circus. So to think that golf would be the one to go, hey, we'll come out first and we'll do it first. Look, golf was the second to last to shut it down. It was golf and NASCAR. So in the long run, when golf comes back, I think golf is going to come back without fans, like I think every other sport will at first. And I think golf will do okay in the long run, but I think we're going to wait longer than what we think for golf to come back. But, and here's my silver lining. This is also where I love what the Masters did, where the Masters said, we're coming back in November. The Masters is the last thing on the schedule, mm-hmm. November 9th to the 15th. And again, talk about puffing their chest out. Not only did they say we coming back and we're going to do this in November, they also have already said, if you got a ticket, come on. Come on in. No other sport has been, no other sport even tried to say that. Only Augusta would be like, not only are we putting the Masters on, we're letting the patrons in too. Like, we're going to make that egg salad. We're going to make those pimento cheese sandwiches. Come get some. And I think November not only is realistic, but I love that the Masters is, at least for me, the biggest beacon at the end of this dark tunnel.
I tell you this though, y'all can come back. I ain't gonna meet you there, right? Like, if they say that, like there's gonna be somebody out there that's like, nah, homie, I'm good. There's somebody's wife that's like, yo, you ain't going out on this trip. Like, nah. This ain't
nah, this ain't the Olympics though. That's what's funny. I remember when that all went down for the Olympics in Zika, mm-hmm. you know, and guys were like, I know plenty of dudes whose girlfriends and wives were like, if you go, don't come home. You know what I mean? Because, yeah. you know, we might put us in the spot. And guys were like, I'm not even going to go. It ain't worth it. You know what I mean? Yeah. I want to be happy at home. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, but the Masters, though, I'm going to tell you right now, there's plenty of dudes, if that came down at the Masters, they're going to be like, yo, suitcases right over the You want me to call Uber or a cab? Because I'm going to the Masters. If you don't want to go, you ain't got to go. But one of us is going.
Well, I tell you this. Last thing I want to ask you, because I just thought of this while we were here. Are these golfers paying their caddies out? Like how I still pay my housekeeper even though she's not keeping the house?
I know. I got the same thing, man. So most golfers, yes, are trying to take care of their caddies in some way or form. We have to remember how caddies get paid. Caddies get a weekly paycheck, and then you get a percentage of what the golfer wins. But if the golfer's not winning anything, where it becomes difficult is for, we all know the big super rich dudes, like all the big name guys, like Rory, mm-hmm. you know, Tiger, Dustin Johnson, like Brooks Koepka, you name it, Jordan Spieth, Ricky Fowler, Justin Thomas, John Rahm. Like those dudes, of yes, they're going to be taking care of their dudes. The guys who have a tough time are the rookies. So the guys who came from the Corn Ferry Tour, or the guys that this is only like their second or third year on the PGA Tour and they made them millions, like those dudes, they could be struggling a little bit too. One of the guys who I'm friends with, who's a caddy and doesn't caddy for a big name guy, told me that his guy is sending them a little bit, just a little bit every week, just to help. Because everybody still got bills and whatnot. So I'm sure that there are some guys that are not in a position to do that. So there are probably some caddies that are hurting. But that's the world we live in right now. So everybody's anxious to kind of get back to work, pay bills.
Keep it real, though. It's some super rich dudes out here that's just being jerks about this too, isn't it? I feel like you know what, though? I feel like so, I feel like I might have figured out who one of them was.
Yeah, I'm not saying. Look, we both know that there's probably one dude for sure, and it ain't Tiger Woods. There's one dude that is probably not throwing his caddy nothing right now. Nothing. But I will say this, without naming the dude or the caddy. Number one, the caddy is single, no wife, no kids, and is very smart with his money anyway, and had a really good bag before, so has I'm sure has a very nice nest egg that is okay. But the principle of a dude that, you know, you made a whole lot of cash with and made a whole lot of cash for, the principle of that dude not even going, hey, man, I'm going to throw you a little something, something just to, hey, we still good. You know what I mean? Like, just to say, hey, man, we still good, I'm still thinking about you. You know what I mean? Because we know, too, if it was us two, bruh, I couldn't caddy for the dude.
No.
I couldn't caddy for the dude.
Especially not if my partners is out here getting a look.
And getting taken care of. Let me put it this way. There would be a couple of times that we would come up one club short. Just for me hoping the fact, just hoping that dude would look at me and be like, we're a little short there. And I would put my hand in my pocket and go, yep, we are. A little short.
Yeah, I just hit him with he's like, how many yards is this? 65. It's really like 61. And that might not seem like a big deal to you.
But in the wind.
That's a stroke.
Yes. Caddies never want to cost their players strokes. You never want to do that. You know what I mean? But every now and then you could do a little something, something to kind of just put that little grain of thought in the back of your mind. You know what I mean? Like, we came up a little short there. Yeah, join the club, bro. That's it. Your shoes are shiny. My shoes not as shiny, bro. So, you know, maybe if I had shiny shoes, I could add better.
Hey, man, that is my man, Michael Collins. We just all out here chilling these days. I'm not saying what you up to, but this is real conversation for me, because asking people what you've been up to is now a question. That's a club I don't have in my bag no more.
The good thing is, so I also got a net and whatnot and a little putting thing that I can hit putts on when I don't go out to the golf course, you know, and it's nice. Although, you know, the nice thing about golf courses being closed now and being able to go out and walk is because there are not very many people on the golf course, take a good size speaker out there. You want to talk about getting into a good rhythm? My golf course has never had as much hip hop played on it as it has the last couple of weeks.
Well, I also want to know who the ones that's out there, because you talk about all these kids coming back from college or whatever and all that stuff. There's somebody in the neighborhood that's out there hitting the greens so they can hit the greens.
Well, it is Gainesville.
Bumping some Tom Petty, right? They out there. Let's get to the point. They living their life.
I have heard Snoop out here a few times too. And ironically enough, how about this? I think one of the first times Snoop ever swung a club was at an appearance that he did at the Masters. He came to the Masters and did a show down the road, and we did a little outing with them before, and he was out. Now, some of his boys in his crew are golf maniacs, but he had never really gotten into it before. And I got pictures of me and Snoop on the golf course together, him with a golf club on and trying to hit shots and stuff too, which was bananas. And there was no stress after that round. And even though I did not partake, apparently I was close enough that I still felt the need to get some chips and Doritos and Fritos after the fact. Because I'll say, wow, I got the munchies. I ain't do nothing.
Hey, man, that is Michael Collins checking out, my man. I appreciate it, man. Stay sane and, you know, good luck on them fractions.
Oh, bruh, I need your help, man. People do not understand the education level that you have. You could help me. We could do some online classes if you want to, you know, jump in there and help with some social studies or something, you know.
I will say this. I'm good with fractions. Like, if the fractions get a little tricky, I got you.
Okay, man. I'm, bruh, I'm the dude that will call you, man. Don't throw that out there.
No, holler at me, man. I'm here to help the kids. I ain't doing all nothing right. else.
I'm going to holler at you when it comes to practice. I'll be like, yo, Major, come on. Call Uncle Bo.
Hey, man. It's all good. And ladies and gentlemen, thanks so much for joining us here on The Right Time. We do this thing a couple times a week. My man Gabe Bassain handles everything behind the scenes. Thank you, sir. Thank you to Michael Collins. And subscribe to The Right Time. Rate us. Review us. Give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. And we'll talk to you guys in a couple of days. Take it easy.
Thanks for checking out The Right Time with Bomani Jones Podcast.
You can listen or subscribe on the ESPN app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
The Right Time
with Bomani Jones.